welcome to Teck's third quarter 2014 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Greg Waller, Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much, Operator, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us this morning for Teck's third quarter 2014 investor conference call. Before we start, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking information on slide 2. This presentation contains forward-looking statements regarding our business. However, various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. At this point, I'd like to turn the call over to Don Lindsay, our President and CEO.
Thank you, Greg, and good morning, everyone. I will begin with a brief overview, followed by highlights from our third quarter results. Then Ron Millos, our Chief Financial Officer, will provide additional color on the quarter from a financial perspective. And we will conclude with a Q&A session where Ron, myself, and additional members of our senior management team would be happy to address any questions that you may have. So starting with an overview on slide 3, we are continuing to execute well in difficult market conditions. Profits and cash flow continue to be affected by steelmaking coal prices, as oversupply is keeping them at unsustainable levels. We've updated our 2014 guidance ranges this quarter to reflect our progress year to date. We have raised our guidance for zinc mine production again due to good results at Red Dog, and we have tightened up our guidance ranges for both coal and copper production towards the upper end of the original ranges. And we've also lowered the ranges for coal and copper costs, reflecting our cost reduction program. And again, we've also reduced our planned CapEx expenditures for 2014 by approximately $375 million. Our focus on cost reduction is continuing to deliver results, and in total, we have now realized $590 million of sustainable annualized operating cost reductions since our cost management program was implemented in the second half of 2012. Teck is in a solid financial position, and I want to repeat that. We are in a solid financial position to navigate current market conditions and a period of higher capital spending through 2017 as we invest in building a significant long-term asset in Fort Hills. We have approximately $5 billion of liquidity, including a current cash balance of about $2 billion as of October 28th, and an unused revolving credit facility of $3 billion U.S. dollars, and no substantial debt due over the next 3 years. So turning to slide 4 and operational highlights from our third quarter, our operations are performing well. Coal production increased in the quarter with record quarterly and year-to-date production at both Elkview and Green Hills. On a year-to-date basis, coal production is up 1 million tons, reflecting good market demand for our steelmaking coal products. Zinc mine production is also up due to an increase in mill throughput at Red Dog. Our operations are continuing to achieve significant cost reductions, even while increasing throughput at 10 of our 13 operations on a year-to-date basis. We lowered total operating costs and unit costs in our copper and zinc business units, and Ron will speak to our cost reduction initiatives later in the call. So looking at slide 5, profitability for the quarter was down overall, driven by significantly lower coal prices compared with the same period last year. Despite these prices, all 6 of our coal mines are operating with positive cash margins. Total gross profit before depreciation and amortization was $750 million, compared with $919 million in the same quarter last year. EBITDA was $651 million in the quarter and approximately $1.8 billion on a year-to-date. Our profit attributable to shareholders was $84 million, or 14 cents per share in the quarter. However, we are benefiting from improving zinc market fundamentals and higher zinc prices, with gross profit before depreciation and amortization in our zinc business up by 48% to $270 million. As you can see from the bottom chart, there are several adjustments that we make to calculate adjusted profit. The largest item is a one-time non-cash charge of $64 million related to new Chilean tax legislation, which was enacted into law in late September. Including all the items in the quarter, adjusted profit was $159 million, or 28 cents per share, compared with $252 million, or 44 cents per share, in the same period last year. In addition, the Canadian to U.S. dollar exchange rate has moved in our favor, with a significant impact on a year-to-date basis. Our sales, of course, are denominated in U.S. dollars, while the majority of our operating costs are incurred in Canadian dollars. And to a lesser extent, a stronger U.S. dollar puts upward pressure on a portion of our operating expenses and our capital expenditures. Overall, each 1 cent change in the exchange rate affects our EBITDA by approximately $60 million on an annualized basis. I'll now review our results by business unit, starting with steelmaking coal on slide 6. Coal sales were higher than guidance in the quarter at 6.7 million tons, but down from the record sales that we had in the third quarter last year. This is the second highest quarterly coal sales that we've achieved for this period. However, oversupply conditions in the market continue to impact coal prices, and while prices remained at similar levels to Q2, they declined significantly when compared with the same period last year. Our average realized price declined 21% on a U.S. dollar basis to $110 U.S. dollars per ton, and 17% on a Canadian dollar basis to 119 Canadian dollars per ton. So overall, our revenue declined by 27% to $798 million. Coal production increased in the quarter, with record quarterly and year-to-date production, as I mentioned, at both Elkview and Green Hills. And also, as mentioned earlier, on a year-to-date basis, coal production is 1 million tons higher than the same period last year. The last of our annual plant maintenance shutdowns was completed in Q3, and for the full year, we now expect production to be in the range of 26.5 to 27 million tons. Our cost reduction efforts are producing significant results, but price increases for key inputs continue to put pressure on costs as well. For the full year, we now expect site costs to be in the range of $52 to $55 per ton, and transportation costs to be in the range of $37 to $39 per ton, which moves the midpoints of the ranges lower than they were before. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization declined by $230 million to $187 million. Now, looking at coal markets on slide 7, there continues to be too much steelmaking coal in the market. By our count, approximately 25 million tons of cutbacks and closures have been announced since the start of the year, but there has been a lag between announcement and implementation. And even when they are fully implemented through the first half of 2015, this will be insufficient to bring the market back into balance. With the additional production coming on in Australia and elsewhere, we expect the market imbalance to still be in the 10 to 15 million ton range. However, the margin curve shows that around one-third of seaborne met coal is being produced at a negative cash margin, and the amount of negative margin production indicates that further cuts are warranted, and getting the market back into balance is dependent on additional production cuts. Given how much production is currently at negative margin, we think there is a good likelihood that this will happen. There is potential for the coal market to be back in balance as early as mid-2015 if further cuts are announced and implemented. Teck is well positioned on the margin curve, as indicated on this chart, and looking forward to Q4, we have reached agreements with our customers to sell 6.3 million tons of coal in the quarter based on $119 per ton for the highest quality products. We expect our coal sales to be at or above 6.5 million tons, resulting in full year sales of approximately 26.2 million tons. I'll now review our base metals business, starting with copper on slide 8. Sales and production were down, were each down 13,000 tons. Our average realized copper price was slightly lower in U.S. dollar terms, and revenue declined 12% to $628 million. The decline in production was primarily due to the mine plant in Antamina shifting to a lower grade zone and a lower amount of copper-only ore. It was also impacted by unexpected mill downtime at Carmen de Andacollo in September due to failure of key electrical equipment, which has been repaired. The mill has operated at full production rates since the end of September. Now, this was partially offset by higher production in Highland Valley, primarily due to increased throughput following the commissioning of the mill optimization program. Mill throughput averaged 139,000 tons per day in Q3, compared with design capacity of 130,000 tons. And we now expect our full-year copper production to be in the range of 330,000 to 340,000 tons. Our cost reduction efforts have been successful in copper. Total cash unit costs before byproduct margins are down about 5% compared with last year, primarily due to our cost reduction efforts. We're lowering our full-year guidance for copper cash unit costs, net of byproduct margins, to between $1.60 and $1.70 U.S. dollars per pound. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization declined by $26 million to $292 million in our copper business. Turning to our zinc business unit on slide 9, I should first note that Antamina and Duck Pond zinc-related results are reported in our copper business unit, as zinc is considered to be a byproduct of both operations. So significant improvements in zinc fundamentals and pricing are reflected in the profitability of our zinc business unit. Gross profit before depreciation and amortization increased 48% to $270 million. Zinc mine production is up 6,000 tons as processing of softer ore has allowed for an increase in mill throughput at Red Dog. The shipping season was completed on October 20th with 1,025,000 tons of zinc concentrate and 205,000 tons of lead concentrate shipped this year. Given strong production performance at Red Dog year to date, we are increasing our full year guidance range for zinc and concentrate production for the second time this year to between 615 and 630,000 tons. We also expect first ore from Ponderé in December, with the capacity to produce 44,000 tons annually coming on. Development work is progressing very well, and it's on schedule and on budget. Refined zinc production was impacted in Q3 by a shift in the timing of Trail's annual maintenance shutdown of the zinc feed roasters, which occurred in Q2 last year. We now expect refined zinc production to be between 275 and 280,000 tons for the full year, as production in the first half of the year was affected by the aging acid plant prior to its replacement in June. Now, looking at base metals markets on slide 10, tight market conditions and concerns over the ownership of certain warehouse metals in China led to LME copper prices declining after mid-July. At the same time, LME inventories have fallen by around 57% or 209,000 tons year to date. For the full year, the International Copper Study Group forecasts a deficit of 307,000 tons for the year. LME zinc prices are now well above last year's levels, as you can see, reflecting improved fundamentals. Mine closures continue through this year and into 2015, which is expected to move the global zinc market further into deficit. LME zinc stocks are down approximately 210,000 tons, or 23% on a year-to-date basis. The International Lead and Zinc Study Group forecasts a deficit of 403,000 tons this year and 366,000 tons next year. LME lead prices were down in the quarter, and LME lead stocks are up around 11,000 tons, or 5% year to date. The global lead market has been expected to move into deficit from 2014 onwards. The International Lead and Zinc Study Group forecasts a deficit of 38,000 tons this year and 23,000 tons next year. Turning to slide 11 and a quick update on Fort Hills, the project remains on schedule and on budget. The project is achieving and tracking to key milestones. Engineering is now over 50% complete. A number of the major engineering, procurement, and construction contracts have been signed with costs substantially within expectations. Construction is progressing per plan. Manpower is now around 3,000 strong and will continue to ramp up to a peak in 2016, and first oil is still expected in Q4 of 2017. During the quarter, over $4.5 billion in major contracts were awarded. The single largest was for the secondary extraction component at $2.6 billion to SK Engineering in Korea. Fluor was awarded the $1.5 billion utilities contract, and a $244 million cogeneration plant contract was also awarded. So these contracts have all been awarded in line with budget and are indicative of the project tracking to overall budget. On a year-to-date basis, our share of cash expenditures was $421 million. And note that cash expenditures tend to lag incurred costs in the initial phase of construction, and then they catch up after completion of the project. So we now expect tech share of incurred costs for the full year to be $800 million, including our remaining earn-in. Following construction, Fort Hills will be a significant long-term asset, and we will benefit from 50 years of strong, stable cash flow. So I'll now turn it over to Ron Millos, our CFO, to provide additional color in the quarter from a financial perspective.
Thanks, Don. I've summarized our changes in cash for the quarter on slide 12. Our cash flow from operations was $429 million in the quarter. We spent $343 million on capital projects, half of which was for Fort Hills, and capitalized stripping costs for an additional $145 million. We paid $156 million in interest payments and $16 million in principal on our debt, and the payment of our semi-annual dividend used $259 million of cash in July. After these items, distributions to non-controlling interests, foreign exchange translation, and other changes in working capital, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of approximately $1.9 billion. Including our unused U.S. $3 billion revolving line of credit that matures in 2019, we currently have over $5 billion of additional liquidity. In addition, our U.S. $6 billion debt shelf prospectus expired in August, and as noted in our news release, we renewed it this month. And this qualifies us to issue debt securities for sale in Canada and the U.S. over the next 25 months, which enables us to access the debt markets if and when deemed appropriate. Looking at slide 13, we are committed to our investment-grade credit rating. Our targets are consistent with maintaining our current rating of mid-BBB. We think this is the right rating for tech as it leaves a cushion in the event of a general industry downgrade or some other event beyond our control. These are long-term targets, and we expect our ratios to vary from target from time to time, reflecting commodity price cycles and corporate activities such as development of major projects like Fort Hills. There are no financial covenants in our public debt indenture and just one financial covenant in our bank credit agreement, which requires us to maintain a debt-to-debt plus equity ratio below 50%. As of the end of Q3, we were at 30%, and we were at 29% on a rolling three-year basis, consistent with our target and current credit rating. Of course, the rating agencies assess tech based on a number of qualitative and quantitative factors, including their own forecasts for commodity prices for the next few years. However, these ratios are guidelines, not hard and fast rules, and only one part of their decision-making process. The agencies understand the cyclical nature of the mining industry and are aware of our capital spending plans and our strong liquidity position of $5 billion. Moving on to slide 14, I've summarized our pricing adjustments for the third quarter. Lower copper prices resulted in $28 million of negative pricing adjustments this quarter, compared with positive pricing adjustments of $24 million in the same period last year. Copper was down 11 cents, and zinc was up 4 cents compared with Q2. These adjustments are included in our income statement under other operating income and expense. As a reminder, refining and treatment charges and the Canadian-U.S. dollar exchange rate should be considered in your analysis of the impact of price changes in the adjustment. You should also consider taxes and royalties when analyzing the impact on net earnings. And the chart on the right represents a simplified relationship between the change in copper and zinc prices and the reporting settlement adjustments and provides you with a good estimate of our pricing adjustments each quarter. Turning to slide 15, our cost reduction program continues to deliver results. We've realized lower total operating and lower unit costs in both our copper and zinc business units this quarter. Overall, we've exceeded our target to realize $200 million of additional annualized operating cost reductions this year. This includes workforce reductions and significant cost reductions in all areas, including corporate business units through reduced staffing levels, travel, and lower discretionary spending. In addition, we've successfully transferred the Quintet Coal Restart project to care and maintenance. The progress year-to-date has enabled us to decrease our full-year cost guidance ranges for both coal and copper that Don spoke to earlier. We have realized a total of $590 million of sustainable annualized operating cost reductions since our cost management program was implemented in the second half of 2012. However, there are offsetting factors such as lower grades, increased waste haul distances, contractual labor rate increases, and higher fuel prices, although the recent drop in oil prices will start to minimize our fuel bills if they stay in place for some time. On a year-to-date basis, we have reduced or maintained our unit costs at similar levels to last year while increasing throughput at 10 of our 13 operations. We've also reduced our planned capital expenditures for 2014 by approximately $375 million since the start of the year, down to approximately $1.5 billion, plus the capitalized stripping, which we still expect to be around $700 million. This includes our commitment to Fort Hills and our Ponderay restart. Timing of expenditures at Fort Hills represents approximately $225 million of the reduction, with the balance due to our cost reduction program. The table on page 22 of our news release provides more detail on our capital spending by each of our business units. Looking at a summary of the updates to our full-year guidance on slide 16, as Don mentioned, we've tightened up our guidance ranges, reflecting our performance on a year-to-date basis. In coal and copper, the midpoints of our production guidance are now higher than our original guidance, and the midpoints of our cost guidance items are now lower. In particular, we have lowered our copper cash unit cost guidance range to 160 to 170 U.S. per pound, compared with our original guidance of 170 to 190 U.S. per pound. In zinc, we've increased our zinc mine production guidance range for the second time this year, given Red Dog's increased mill throughput. The midpoint of our zinc mine production guidance is now significantly higher, and we expect 615 to 630,000 pounds of zinc and concentrate for the full year, compared with our original guidance of 555 to 580,000 tons. We've also lowered our refined zinc production guidance range to 275 to 280,000 tons due to the impact of Trail's aging acid plant on production prior to its replacement in June earlier this year. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Don for some closing comments.
Okay, thanks, Ron. And looking at slide 17 and a summary of our near-term priorities, we are continuing our focus on cost management programs. We are reducing our capital spending for 2014, and we're executing the restart of the Pondere lead zinc mine to benefit from improving zinc fundamentals. And with that, we'd be happy to answer your questions. And please note that some of our management team members are on the line in different locations, so there may well be a pause after you ask your question as we sort out who's going to answer from where. Okay, over to you, operator.
Thank you. Please press star 1 at this time for any questions. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. Please limit your inquiry to one question plus one follow-up question. After that, if you have any further questions, please rejoin the queue. Our first question is from Sal Thorani from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Sal.
Hi. I wanted to ask you two things. One is there has been some recent news about a possible strike at Antamina. You haven't mentioned it in the prepared remarks. Any color on that?
I'll turn that one over to Dale Anders, Senior Vice President Copper.
Yeah, thanks. Antamina did receive some notice from the union yesterday about a potential strike on November 10th. I do want to reiterate our mining operations are currently operating normally. And the concern raised by the union is really around worker profit sharing, and our profits are down at Antamina this year due to the lower grades. And that's the concern raised by the union. I just want to also reiterate that worker payments are governed by law and an established agreement, and the strike, if it were to happen, would be illegal.
Okay, great. Next thing on zinc, Don, you mentioned that that the zinc production, you increased your zinc forecast a couple of times this year, and you mentioned about that the efficiency at the Red Dog has been the player in that. I was wondering if is the market demand also requiring you to do that, or is really the function of Red Dog doing better than really expected that you raise the guidance a couple of times this year?
Well, I think it's a two-part answer to, I guess, your two-part question. So first, and I can turn over to Rob Scott to give a bit more detail, but the increased production at Red Dog is due, as we said, to softer ore allowing increased throughput through the mill. But in terms of demand, which was the first part of your question, we've seen strong demand, particularly strong demand in China, and the market is forecast to be in about a 400,000-ton deficit. And Andrew Stonkus is here from our marketing side. So, Rob, Scott, do you have anything you want to add on Red Dog, and then Andrew on the market?
Oh, thanks, Don. That's quite correct on Red Dog's situation. The ore is softer than we expected this year. It's largely a function of more barite in the ore, which is a softer grinding material than silica. We're in a new deposit, as you might recall. The acolic deposit we started mining perhaps a little over 3 years ago. And so our experience with acolic is new within the last 3 years, and there is more barite in the acolic deposit. So the softer grinding ore is an unexpected upside surprise to us. So that's what accounts for the additional zinc production from Red Dog this year.
Andrew, you want to comment on the markets?
Yeah, on the market, Sal, without question, the International Lithium Trade Group has put out their forecast for 14, as Tom mentioned, at just over 400,000 ton metal deficit this year and close to 400,000 ton deficit for next year forecast. The other key thing to remember is we're still going to face some significant mine closures coming up. I think we're all aware of the additional mine closures we're seeing. So the demand for concentrate is strong. The spot market for concentrates is very active, very strong. Chinese belt imports are up 9% to the end of September. So demand for metal is strong and growing, and supply of concentrates is going to be constrained as we see these mine closures continuing to evolve. So demand overall, concentrates and metal is continues to be very robust.
Thank you. Appreciate the color. Thanks.
Really?
Thank you. Our next question is from Jorge Bearstein from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Jorge with DB. Just my question was really related to the recent tax code changes in Chile, and we saw the pretty significant jump quarter on quarter. Could you give us some guidance as to, at the end of the day, how much the Chilean tax changes affect your overall corporate tax rate? Is this an issue of a bump up of 1, 2, or 5 percentage points on a corporate-wide basis?
Over to Ron Millos.
Sure. The effective rate in Chile will now be 35%, Jorge, and it will be a 28% tax in Chile, and then 7% if we bring money out of Chile back to Canada or another location. So that shouldn't change, maybe push the overall effective tax rate up a percent at best, but again, that depends on where the profits come from down the road.
Great, thanks. And maybe as well, if you could comment a little bit on the sensitivity to the copper projects down there and your current mines. Does this higher tax rate impact some of the economics for your projects that are still to be built and any of your ongoing operations? In other words, would there be any kind of further write-down to be expected maybe in the fourth quarter?
I think we'll go to John Gingell for the last part of that, and then the first part, either Dale or Tim. Dale for current operations and Tim for projects. There's about three parts to that question. So,
sorry.
John, why don't you start? We'll work backwards if that's okay.
Okay, so the increase in the first stage taxes, which is the thing that affects the economics primarily, does have a negative effect on some aspects of our mines. However, we have done our impairment reviews in the third quarter of all of our projects in Chile, and we are not taking any write-downs. We have some room there, and so I wouldn't expect anything. Things can always change, and so we will continue to monitor these things, but based on current conditions, there won't be any write-downs.
Just a quick comment on operations. As a result of the tax change, we don't anticipate any change to our long-term mining policy.
Great.
Sorry, with respect to the capital project QB2 in particular, certainly we have updated the model for the new tax regime, and we certainly still see it as a very positive project going forward.
Yeah, I might also add just another bit of color. Well, we've done all the numbers with very conservative assumptions for our auditors and the rest of it. If I look out at what's actually happening in the market in terms of transactions and recent sales of copper assets, they've gone for some pretty good values. So we always have that as a market sanity check that indicates we've got some very valuable assets.
Thank you, and I again apologize for the multi-part nature of the question.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. We've got all the team here.
Thank you. Our next question is from Curt Woodworth from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Don, I just wanted to follow up on the comment on the coking coal market in terms of potential balance by middle of 15. I just wanted to know how you guys are thinking about kind of aggregate seaborne trade flows into China, because if you look at, you know, the coke export number and the steel export number this year, on a met coal equivalent basis, it's almost a 20 million ton negative impact on the market if you assume that's supplied with domestic met coal, and obviously the aggregate seaborne numbers down about 15 million tons. So do you think that if you continue to see, you know, kind of holistically all those things continue to go against you in China, that you could still be balanced, or how should we think about that?
So that's a very important question, one that I spend a lot of time on and visiting actual customers in China and the rest of it, but I'm still going to turn it over to Rio Foley to start.
All right. So, Kurt, I mean, you're right. Steel exports from China this year are running at quite high level. However, what we're seeing in other markets as well is steel production is also up around the world. So that would indicate that demand is actually improving overall in the world. And the steelmakers in other market areas are still able to compete with the Chinese steel producers.
Did that answer your question, or was there another part to that?
No, that's helpful. And then just a question kind of also on the coke side. There's been some discussion of Japanese steel companies shutting down some coke capacity to import Chinese coke because it's cheaper. Are you guys seeing any signs of that occurring?
So what is happening in Japan, Kurt, and also in some other regions of the world is that the installed coke batteries are aging. And as a result, when they get to 40 years old or more, the production that is coming from those coke ovens, those coke batteries, is actually lower than they were originally designed for. And as a result, when steelmaking is running at a high level, they need to compensate their domestic coke production with imports, and a lot of imports are coming from China.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mitesh Thakkar from FBR Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. My first question is on capital spending. The CapEx, which is deferred, I think it's about $200+ million. Should we just put it in 2015, or would that push off some more CapEx from 15 to 16 as well? And on the maintenance CapEx side, is $500 million a good number for all your businesses going forward, or are there any variances going forward, such as selenium or replacement cycles of equipment that we need to be aware of?
Okay, Ron Mills?
I'll take the first part of the question on that deferral. Is yes, it will flow into next year, but then the actual incurred cost next year on Fort Hills, a good chunk of that will likely not get paid until 2016 and so on each year. So a good chunk of the Fort Hills, the total spend when the project is completed, you're going to end up having bills coming in late 2017 and sometime into 2018. So the key point is that that deferral is just due to the timing of when we get the receipts or the invoices from the various suppliers. And as you can appreciate, with the number of subcontractors and 3,000 employees and timesheets, it takes time to accumulate the bills and get them ultimately to the Fort Hills project. So that's a deferral that likely will bounce around from each year and ultimately catch up after the project is completed.
Yeah, so for absolute clarity, the answer to your question is no, not put it into 2015.
Okay. How about the second part on the maintenance CapEx side?
Well, the maintenance CapEx side, we're doing our budgets right now, so we haven't given any guidance for 2015 as yet. What I can tell you is that, you know, there's intense scrutiny on it. I've got some early numbers that I'm quite pleased with, so that would indicate that it's likely going to be less than what you're assuming. But you know, we're not done yet, and we haven't published those numbers yet, so we'll have to just wait till they come out officially.
Great. Thank you very much, guys, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Orest Walkada from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First question around the coal business. Very good cost here at $88 a ton, excluding those inventory write-downs. My question is, are those sustainable, and if so, for how long? And then also, you mentioned that all six of your mines were running in a cash margin positive position in the quarter. Just want to clarify if that includes sustaining capital and capitalized stripping.
I'm going to turn it over to Ian Kilgore, but the quick answer to your last question is yes. Now, over to Ian.
Thanks, Don. Yes, that's right. Those numbers include sustained capital and capitalized stripping. In terms of moving forward, we are continuing to work on every aspect of the costs of the business, labour, contractors, equipment efficiency, consumable costs, and we expect to be able to keep making progress as we move into the next year. Right now we're going through detailed examination of our 2015 budget and our five-year plans, and looking for every opportunity to improve them.
Is there anything you're aware of that would make those costs increase in 2015 at this point?
Nothing we're aware of right now. The one factor that has increased costs this year is fuel costs, but that appears to be mitigating at the moment, and hopefully that will continue into next year.
Okay. And a separate question, if I could, on the balance sheet for Ron. In terms of your investment grade debt metrics, obviously we're starting to push some of those in terms of your long-term targets. Can you give us any color in terms of how far you think you can push those on a short-term basis before, you know, there could be some pushback from the rating agencies in terms of investment grade?
We think we've got a fair amount of cushion for investment grade. Clearly, in this low-price environment, the rating agencies, depending on their views of what future coal prices or near-term coal prices are, you know, we've got a negative outlook from a number of the agencies right now, still triple B mid. So in this environment, there'll be some pressure for them to watch it closely, and we could see in a low-price environment, a potential notch knocked down to triple B low. But I think we're relatively safe from a non-investment grade, but you never know what bothers the rating agencies at any point in time.
Okay. In terms of debt to EBITDA, is there a level that you'd be comfortable taking the balance sheet to on a short-term basis before you would look at, you know, other vehicles to reduce the debt load?
Yeah, well, our targets are well within the investment grade range, and certainly we expect that at certain points in time that we're going to be bouncing up and down above the targets. But the agencies look at it on a three-year average type thing. We've also said that on occasion we will exceed our targets if for a short period of time if we see a way back to those targets within a year or two, and the agencies are clearly aware of that. We discuss that with them on a regular basis. They're aware of all of our capital spending plans and our cash position, our liquidity position. So we can stretch it for a bit, but you know, if you end up with 2 and 3 years where you're over their targets, that's when they start to think about whether they should change the rating or not.
Okay, appreciate the caller. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from David Charles from Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Just a quick question going back to capital expenditures. Maybe I'll ask the question slightly differently than how it was posed before. How should we look at capital expenditures in 2015? Should we look at it simplistically that it's roughly $2.2 billion, that is similar to this year at $1.5 in spending on all the major projects, and then add on another $700 million for capitalized stripping?
I'm afraid the answer is going to be a bit similar to the last one in that we haven't finished the budgeting exercise. I think, you know, you're definitely in range, David. We hope, obviously, to do better than that. We've just spent a fair bit of time focusing on sustaining capital in all the businesses, and as I said, it's been intense scrutiny, and I'm pleased with where we're ending up, but we can't give you a number on that yet. The deferred stripping, order of magnitude, same as last year, as you've mentioned, and the only major project going forward is Fort Hills. And you know, we've talked about that earlier in this call. Yes, we didn't incur incurred expenses, but we didn't lay out the cash for all the expenses. But it would be about the same or within order of magnitude next year as this year. So when you add that up, you know, actually it comes a bit less than what you just said, but, you know, we're not done yet. So I'm sorry that we can't be more detailed than that in the answer, but, you know, generally I think you're in line.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to be sure that there was nothing other than the ones that we've seen so far that would come in next year that would change the numbers. So that's a good answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Lucas Pipes from Green Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Just to follow up on the cost side, in the release there was a sentence about cost pressures will become more significant as mining progresses at each of our sites. And I was just wondering if you had any specific segment or operation in mind with that sentence, and then if you could maybe provide some quantitative parameters around that and maybe also some timing.
I'll turn it over to Ian Kilgour.
Yeah, thanks. I guess the mining plans at each of our mine sites are constantly under scrutiny. As you develop an ore deposit, typically you start in the best place, and as the mine plan progresses, you continue it, and in general, as we know from trends in the industry, head grades decrease in the copper industry, for example, and they're things that you'll have to cope with. So I think that comment is really just reflecting the fact that we're required to keep working on our mine plans to optimize them over time.
And if there's a difference in between those, the outlook for these various mine plans in between copper, coal, zinc?
No, I don't think there's any particular aspect that's outstandingly different between the different business units.
Thank you. And then maybe a follow-up question for Réal. Well, there's been a lot of talk about this Chinese import tax that was instigated. What is your opinion about that and how it could impact Teck Resources going forward?
Thanks, Lucas. Well, so far we've seen no impact from the 3% tariff on steelmaking coal. Our selling prices in China have remained pretty steady compared to where they were pre-tariff. This tariff became effective on October 15th, and we understand that the domestic suppliers have actually increased their prices commensurate with the 3% tariff, as we kind of expected would happen.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Don, when I meet with investors, I'm repeatedly asked about Fort Hills and whether Teck would either sell their stake or dilute down. I know what my answer is. I'm just wondering what your response is to that question.
No and no. Fort Hills is, in our view, looking better and better. We're particularly encouraged by the progress 1 year in. Suncor, in our view, is doing a good job, and as we've mentioned earlier in the call, it's on track, and all the major contracts are coming in within expectations. So then when we rerun the models, you know, we've seen quite a contraction in the discount for Western Canada Select from as much as $40 2 years ago to $14 today, so that more than neutralizes the decline in WTI. And we've rerun the numbers that currently we would get a higher net back today than we did when we sanctioned the project. So we're all systems going. That one, looking forward to having it as part of our portfolio. You know, it'll be the fourth leg, a very strong asset for 50 years in a good jurisdiction. We like it.
Okay. And just a follow-on question, and this is probably for Ron. On the balance sheet, you've got $807 million in investments and other stuff. I'm just wondering what that is.
John?
I'm just flipping pages here.
Hang on a sec. We're just rounding up the details for you, Greg.
Yep.
If you have another question, maybe we'll follow. We can follow up with the answer on this one.
Oh, I don't have another question.
Maybe, operator, if we can go to the next question, and we'll come back with an answer on this.
Thank you. Our next question is from Oscar Cabrera from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. This with regards to Fort Hills, with the increase in oil production in the U.S., are there any concerns with regards to the assumptions that I believe most of us are working with in regards to pipelines, spreads between oil prices or increase in logistic costs that could result in a reduction in margins?
I'm going to turn that over to Ray. I will sort of preface his remarks by saying, we are working on the marketing plan. We have some very encouraging results, but we won't be releasing our overall thing for quite some time yet. So when we've got it finished, we don't want to sort of be giving it to piecemeal where things could be taken out of context. But Ray, how would you like to answer that?
Thanks for the question, Oscar. So we are looking at our Fort Hills marketing and logistics plan. Of course, we have to have that plan in place 3 years from now when we're projected to have Fort Hills start up into production. So we do have some time to take a look at that. We are encouraged by the developments in the market access space over the last while. We think that there is progress being made, particularly encouraged with Line 9 reversal coming along. TransCanada's proposal on Energy East looks quite good at all Canadian solution to a tidewater port. And so those projects, especially Energy East, will be coming on in about the time frame that we'll be looking for capacity. And the other thing that people should remember is that the common carrier line from that Enbridge has from Hardisty into Superior is also going through maintenance and upgrades. It's going to increase that capacity going forward as well. So when we take a look at the market in the time frame that we need it, we think that those logistics solutions are going to be there and be there at a cost that is going to be effective for getting our product to market.
Okay, so I would look forward to seeing that. And then second question, going back to your comment on the balanced market for metallurgical coal in the second half of this year, understand that your assumptions for demand is basically an increase year over year. With BHP, Mitsubishi increasing their supply, how much cuts to supply do you expect from the rest of the market to be balanced until the second half of next year?
Go ahead, Rial.
Thanks, Oscar. Overall, if we look at the demand side, crude steel production is continuing to increase at about 2-3% per year. That is the forecast. Year to date, September, it's running at about 2%. So you're right, demand continues to increase. On the supply side, our view is that there is an additional 10 to 15 million tons of production cuts that are required to bring the market back into balance. That's over and above the 25 that have been announced.
25. I'm sorry to, this is very short. So 25 plus 10 to 15, how many of those have been actually implemented?
Implemented to date to the end of Q3 out of the 25 is probably somewhere between 7 to 8 million tons in our estimate.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the call.
The important point, Oscar, is that as the production cuts are announced, that capacity is removed from the market. So implementation is delayed, no doubt, and inventories need to work their way through the system as well.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
Operator, we'll follow up with the answer to the previous question before you move on to the next speaker. Greg, it's the major items in there are, you know, basically our long-term receivables and various deposits that we have. Pension assets, they're about a couple hundred million. The previous one was a couple hundred million as well. Our marketable securities and investments that have a maturity, short-term investments that have a maturity of greater than 90 days. If you go to our annual report, is a note disclosure in there. It's the similar type items, and it's up about $50 million. And order of magnitude, they're roughly the same percentages of items. Hopefully that answers your question, Greg.
Thank you.
And operator, we can move on. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from Ralph Profiti from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just to follow up on your just-given answer, Ron, is liquidation of any of these marketable securities behind the $1.85 billion in cash that you ended the quarter with and the $2 billion that you have currently, or are we strictly talking cash flow from operations as the difference?
Cash flow. I'm not sure I fully understood what the question was there, Ralph. Can you repeat it?
Sure thing. Between the $1.85 billion at quarter end and the $2 billion that was cited in Don's statements as of October 28th, is that strictly that rise attributable to cash flow from operations, or are we seeing some of these, you know, working capital and marketable securities, non-operating, being behind that increase?
No, it's mainly cash flow from operations.
Okay, great. And if you can just update me with the new estimate on the pace of Fort Hills spending, where do we stand on the earn-in?
We would expect probably somewhere around the end of the first quarter, so March, April, we would move from the 27.5% contribution down to the 20% contribution.
Got it. That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. For the next question is from Alex Kodetsky from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks and good morning. I guess a question for Yael, but curious to see if you're getting any difference of behavior on the buyer's side. Are you selling incremental quantities on contract than what you were, and are people still actively looking in the spot market, or have you started to see more people trying to source material under longer term agreements?
All right, thanks, Alex. I guess over the past 3+ years, the spot market price has been below the quarterly benchmark, and that has driven more tons to be priced on shorter than quarterly basis in the market, and actually our sales profile reflects that. Now, at the same time as we say this, we're seeing good performance from customers, whether they're quarterly priced customers or shorter term priced customers. We have a number of agreements in place, long-term agreements in place with the majority of our customers that give us some certainty on volume. And in terms of split, like if you look at the ratio of our sales on shorter than quarter, we're probably still selling about 50% or so for 2014 at quarterly price. And that's up from around 40% in 2013, and it was around 20% in 2012, and prior to 2012, it was 15 to 25%. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great as far as, it does in terms of a long-term trend, but I'm just trying to gauge, the question maybe asked this way. With the production cuts that have been announced and sort of, the presumption that material would be less available in 4 to 6 months' time, are you starting to get any indications from the steelmakers that they may be concerned about getting their hands on material, or are we not at that point yet?
Well, we're starting to get anecdotal comments from customers who were buying larger quantity from the U.S. We've actually seen changes in our sales distribution if we look at 2014. And it was quite a bit of U.S. gold that was going into Asia for the past 3 years or so. And that has been reduced as a result of prices being at very low levels right now. We're also seeing additional demand coming from markets on the Atlantic side as a result of some of those cuts as well.
Okay. No, that's very helpful. Thank you, Rael.
Thank you. Our next question is from Paritosh Isra from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could share your thoughts on the iron ore market. Do you see any opportunity for Teck at these prices and valuation?
No. We spent a fair bit of time looking at the iron ore market. Well, we have looked at it over many years. We've reviewed different opportunities. We were never able to find an opportunity that met our value criteria, and that would still be the case.
Great. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Our next question is from Harry Mateer from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Ron, first question, what cash balance would you be comfortable going down to before you would start wanting to use your credit facility or term debt to finance spending? And, if you're still in a negative free cash position next year, would your expectation be to pay down the $300 million maturity with your credit line or instead to refi that with term debt?
I guess we think we could squeeze the cash balance down to sort of in the $300 to $400 million range. We've talked in the past that we thought it would be 500, but we've sort of had a good hard look at that and could move it down. As far as using the line of credit or refinancing that $300 million, both options are open to us, and I think we'll just have to take a look at what the circumstances are at that time.
Okay, thanks. And then just as a follow-up, you don't seem particularly worried about investment-grade ratings given where your metrics currently stand in your outlook, but you did acknowledge some risk to the current mid-BBB rating. So, should we take that to mean you're not going to look to try and defend the current ratings with whatever actions might be at your disposal, and then, the true commitment is just to investment-grade overall?
We certainly would like to maintain that mid rating because of the cushion it provides, but there's a lot of things that are beyond our control on that one, and depending on where commodity prices go, we'll just have to wait and see on that. But certainly, it's a preferred position, but definitely we want to maintain the investment grade for sure.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, well then maybe I'll wrap up with a couple of comments. And one is that, Teck is in very strong condition. The operations are running very well. The balance sheet is very strong. The debt is termed out as far as 2042, I think. And I point out that, 6 months ago people were forecasting that our cash balance would get down to sort of $1.2 billion or so. And here we are at a little over $2 billion today. And while it will go down by year end somewhat, but we're starting next year, 2015, in very strong position, and we've taken the actions with the operations to ensure that we stay that way, and that means that we'll go through 2015 with a pretty good position, and next thing you know you're halfway through Fort Hills already and looking towards the end of it. So and during that time the odds of commodity prices changing are pretty high, and whether that's in zinc or whether that's in coal, we'll have to see. So Teck is in very strong condition, and I want to emphasize that. Secondly, just a comment on commodity markets in general, and this could be coal. We've had a lot of questions on today, but this could be zinc, this could be copper. And generally how it works, a lot of people who follow the industry may not realize this or may have started following the industry more recently, but, when a commodity is in surplus, the prices tend to fall to somewhere around the 90th percentile on the cost curve. And if it's in a big surplus, it can fall for a period of time even lower, to the 70th percent. And then inevitably what happens is a lot of people shut down because they're losing cash. If a commodity is in deficit, and it doesn't have to be a very big deficit, then you tend to get pretty healthy margins, sometimes 100% or better. And if it gets to be a little bit more significant deficit, you do even better. That has always been the case. Some people, even in the industry, may not understand that, but that's generally where it occurs.
As an example in coal, because I know there's a lot of questions about that, but if you went back in history to when the first floods occurred in Queensland, there were a lot of estimates on how much coal production was lost, and no one knew at the time because it took a while for the place to dry out. But in the end, I think the calculations, and this is one estimate, people can go back check, was only about 11 million tons of production was actually lost, and it drove the price up to $300. So I think Rail's comments about how the steel industry continues to grow and that requires a bit more coal each year, ultimately as production is shutting down from the announced shutdowns and demand overall worldwide continues to increase, you'll get to a spot where balance is close to and then achieved and then goes into deficit again. And we see that coming in the ensuing years. Customers will see that and they'll move to secure their supply and prices will move up as they always have in the past. The industry is cyclical. It always has been, always will be, and we're looking forward to the cycle turn, and don't be surprised when it does. Again, those comments could apply to zinc or to copper or coal or oil, for that matter, any other commodity. And with that, we thank you for your questions. We look forward to the next quarterly call in February. Thank you, operator.
Thank you. The conference call has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank all who participated.